Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm here with two of our regular panelists because one of them has to watch an MLS playoff game. So I think we can all agree that Ben is a plastic American who's never allowed back on the podcast. But I have our most important ones here because we have to talk about two very important games that feature Tottenham's best player of the last decade, Moussa Sissoko. So we're going straight to the Moussa Sissoko news desk. For Reno Wallabout, Rob, what late-breaking Moussa Sissoko news do you have for us? I almost got through that.
The king is dead. Long live the king. We're buzzing over here at the Moussa Sissoko news desk.
How big a week was this for the Moussa Sissoko news desk?
Pretty big. Huge, you might say. Enormous. Gigantic.
Did you... I can't think of a good way to work the Moussa Sissoko song in there. Do you want to make any jokes about the Moussa Sissoko song?
Who needs Messi when you've got Sissoko?
Sure. Let's go with that.
Is he playing Barcelona?
Not for a while yet, but yes. Why play Messi when Sissoko will probably play in that game? That is a very good point. Next up, we have not our Moussa Sissoko expert, but a Moussa Sissoko enthusiast in his spare time. It is Brian Ashlock. Brian, what Moussa Sissoko content do you have for us today?
I don't think I have any. I'm not the Moussa Sissoko expert here. I can merely point out that he is no longer not good. So
no longer not good. Is that what you call the finest member of Tottenham Hotspur? Our most important player?
No, I call that Harry Kane.
Oh. Well, you'd be wrong.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You should be.
If Harry Kane is the heart of Tottenham, Moussa Sissoko is definitely like the pancreas.
I was going to say the spleen, but sure, why not?
He's one of the two kidneys.
So we have two pretty impressive Spurs victories to talk about, and weirdly enough, Moussa Sissoko played a very big role in both of these victories. It feels like the crest of a wave of popularity for Moussa Sissoko. Let's start with I thought this was the real surprise, because I might have predicted the Inter result, but I sure as shit didn't see this one coming. Tottenham handily beat Chelsea 3-1 this past weekend at Wembley. It was, 3-1 probably makes it seem closer than it was. I mean, Rob, was this you talked about how you thought Chelsea would be getting lucky all year. Did you see the scale of this victory coming, or was it a surprise to you as well?
I don't think anybody expected blowing their doors off in the first 20 minutes. I seem to recall somebody on this podcast saying Chelsea giving up a lot of good chances and nobody scoring them. And we actually didn't score a lot of good chances.
That was still true in this match.
But created so freaking many that we were able to score quite a few of them. No, it was very unexpected. It reminded me of two games in recent memory. The New Year's pasting against Mourinho's Chelsea and the first game against Pep's Manchester City, where they came in off a really hot start and we just totally shut them down. And it felt like one of the rare occasions where Pochettino just game planned the shit out of somebody. And in this case, it was retiring Jorginho.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Brian, what did Spurs do differently in this game to just so effectively wax Chelsea? Because I don't think any Spurs fan is going to argue that this is their most impressive performance of the season.
Well, it's like Rob said, we really took Jorginho out of the game. If you watch the Everton match that Chelsea played the week before, Everton did basically the same thing. They sat a man on Jorginho. They forced him to be less progressive with his passing. And that's what we did. We just sat Dele Alli right on Jorginho. And for, I don't know, most of the first 60 minutes of the match, Jorginho was playing every pass either square or backwards, and he wasn't able to spray balls up to, you know, the attackers like Hazard and Morata, and he wasn't you know, progressing the ball in any sort of fashion, whether it was dribbling or with the pass. And, you know, that early pressure on Jorginho allowed us to press in other spots on the pitch. It allowed guys like Eriksen and Son and Kane to put pressure on the defenders where they normally wouldn't have pressure. And we forced Chelsea into a lot of mistakes. And we didn't really have a lot of the ball, or certainly didn't feel like we had a lot of the ball, but we had a lot of chances just by virtue of forcing them into mistakes in their own half and then converting chances that came from them. And you know, the 3-1 scoreline in this game was really, like, it should have been a lot worse. I mean, there was how many chances did Son put just over the bar? Harry Kane has one from about 8 yards out that he misses. You know, this game could have been 6, could have been 7. Like, we really kicked the crap out of him.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Son, who is probably the non-Sissoko man of the match, was, you know, really incredible. Just scored an absolute... You know, I mean, it's one thing to score a world-class goal like that. It's another thing to actually retire Jorginho on that same goal. It was genuinely incredible. But, I mean, we just absolutely ran Chelsea off the pitch, and I didn't see it coming. I mean, Brian, when we talk about this match, we've had these conversations both on the podcast and off the podcast that missing Eriksen and Dele Alli all year was really having an impact on the team. And beyond the sort of specific tactics that we ran on Jorginho, I think this match really demonstrated what having both of those guys healthy and in our squad is able to do for us, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably the first game, I hesitate to say all season, but the first game in a long time that we have had all of Dele, Christian Eriksen, Heung-Min Son, and Harry Kane on the pitch for. You know, whether it's been Son's fitness or being away at the Asian Games, Eriksen's fitness, Ali's fitness, we just haven't gotten all four of those guys on the pitch. And you, as good as Eric Lamela has been, and as good as Lucas Moura started the season, Spurs are at their best when that is our attacking four. And that was really evident in the Chelsea game, because those guys just know how to work together. The movement that the four of them have together, both in midfield and in the attacking third, is so good. They just know how to find each other. And, you know, and like you said, Son had an amazing game. I mean, that run to get the third goal, like you said, he retires Jorginho. He makes David Luiz look absolutely silly. You know, it's good to have him back and looking like he's actually finally fit again. It looks like him not going with South Korea for the last international break really allowed him, like, 2 weeks to rest and get healthy, and Spurs are going to be in a lot better shape in the difficult run that they've got coming up in December and January if he's fully fit.
What was more embarrassing in this game? Kepa's sort of lack of reaction when Harry Kane hit a hope shot from like 50 yards out, or what happened to Jorginho on that Son goal?
You know, I can sympathize with Kepa on his not moving. I think he's anticipating David Luiz or somebody to step in front of it and there to be a deflection. But the effort that Jorginho made in trying to stop Son is, I mean, that's, it's laughable at best. Like, that was at least, like, foul him. Like, don't, it was so bad.
You got to catch him first, though, Brian.
I mean, you know,
I think grab, that was full effort.
Grab something, you know, kick him. Like, I mean, oh God, it was so bad.
I mean, he had David Luiz coming to rescue him, though.
Yeah, David Luiz, who was just like, you know what? No, I don't want any of this.
Just David Luiz just saw that like field of rakes in front of him and just thought, nah, you can.
Yeah, it was like he was having flashbacks to the 7-1 or whatever this in the World Cup.
Rob, when you look at Dele Alli's performance, which I think is really the key to the game, how inspired a tactical move was that from Pochettino, sticking him on Jorginho and just letting him completely remove him from the match?
I mean, what was so great about it was that he did it on both ends. He pressed the shit out of him, and then when we had the ball, he pulled him all over the field so that he was never where he was supposed to be, and Tottenham just got one-on-ones over and over again with Chelsea center backs. And it was just, I mean, he was nowhere to be seen. Even on Kane's weird goal where Luiz jumps out of the way,
you that can only see happens Jorginho, because like, he's so far
he's
out of
5
position.
Yards behind Kane. When Kane cuts inside, Jorginho is nowhere to be seen. So I think basically since he came back, Ali has looked like our best player. And
I mean,
he's
is he taking
so
the
smart.
Lead this year?
Because
they're playing
so
him further
smart.
Back. He's not scoring as much, but he's orchestrating much more of the play.
Yeah, well, he's playing as a midfielder. And when your midfield includes Moussa Sissoko, sometimes you need that. So, and it's just, he's so amazingly versatile that, I mean, he still finds ways to score goals, obviously. He did. He got the first goal against Chelsea. But, you know, he's a good midfielder. He's a good ball progressor. And his movement without the ball is just like a, you know, 10-year veteran at the top level. So,
and
yeah,
I think the underrated thing about him, though, is that he is so tactically sound. And that he is willing to do the kind of dirty work off the ball, like you said, and the fact that Dele Alli, who is, you know, one of the world's best talents at football, is 100% willing to be just like, look, all right, here's your remit for tonight. It is man-mark Jorginho, and you know what? You're maybe not going to get as many chances to get in the box and get shots off, but you can win us the game if you do your job right, and that's what he did. He seemed perfectly happy doing it. He seemed perfectly happy to spend the entire game winding Chelsea players up, especially Jorginho.
He seemed to really enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a shithead. Everybody knows he's a shithead. But, you know, like, he executed the game plan perfectly. And, I mean, you know, there are so many players that we talk about in this day and age where it's just like, oh, they won't track back. You know, you can't really get them to press as much or whatever. That's not Dele Alli. Dele Alli will do whatever you tell him to do as long as it's going to help the team win. And he absolutely did that against Chelsea.
I think it was me who tweeted, if all Dele Alli does for the rest of his career is just score goals and fuck with Chelsea, like, he's a club legend.
He's really good at fucking with Chelsea.
He brings it. But he does it every time we play a big team, but especially Chelsea for whatever reason.
He's the gal someone's eyes out to really, you know.
Well, I think
ascend.
He's discovered that, like, scoring lots of goals against them seems to work even better.
Yep, but I'm just as a cherry on top, you know. Take the 3-game suspension, you know, earn your place at the top of the mountain, kid.
Maybe the next time he sees Fabregas.
So, you look at the other side of this performance for a second. Chelsea scored that goal with Giroud almost at the end of the match, but I think the game was completely over by then. I didn't feel like it made a difference. Really, I think the only time Chelsea felt like they had a chance to get in this match was when Hazard maybe should have gotten a penalty for Juan Foyth bowling him over. Brian, was this, should the Chelsea have gotten a penalty? What did you think of Foyth's performance?
Yes, Chelsea should have had a penalty. That was definitely a penalty. It was clumsy from Foyth, and it was inside the penalty box. It absolutely should have been called. And, you know, it was at a point in the game where we were up 1-0, and so maybe it doesn't matter in the long run. Like, we were still maybe going to do the same things to them the rest of the match, but I don't think it really changed the tenor of the match if it had been called. But in terms of Foyth, I thought he was largely fine again. I think, you know, obviously we're talking about him differently if that penalty is conceded. But, I mean, for a 19 or 20-year-old or whatever he is, 13, who knows, you know, he's okay. He continues to hold his own in the Premier League. I mean, he's up against some of the elite talent in the league. He's playing against Morata, Giroud. He's playing against Eden Hazard. And he doesn't look out of place out there. I think other than the penalty, I can't think of anything else he did necessarily good or bad. So,
some of that was the product of, I mean, we were just completely owning Chelsea throughout. I mean, they were not putting as much pressure on our back line as I think we would have expected coming into this match.
Yeah. And, you know, I think largely, again, he was fine. Rob said it before. If you don't notice him, that's good. And I think aside from the penalty, we probably didn't notice him that much, so.
He had a couple of shaky moments, but.
Yeah, all things that's considered.
Not surprising, considering, you know. Yeah, Eden Hazard terrorizes lots of center backs, and he got beaten. He kind of got beaten on the Giroud goal, but Giroud's kind of good at that. So, I mean, whatever, it's fine. Chelsea were supposed to be the third best team in the league.
So, we talked about this a little bit, but I want to go back to the Moussa Sissoko news desk. I mean, what made him so good in this game, Rob?
What's really amazing about what's happened with Moussa Sissoko is that they've realized that there are two or three things that Moussa Sissoko is actually really good at. Aside from Uno, and they have done their best to let him do those things and not make him do the things that he is not good at, like passing and shooting. So by the kind of rejiggered midfield they ran, where Dyer was the anchor and Ali or Eriksen would drop back in and help out and handle passing from deep, Moussa Sissoko's job was to run and break up plays and run and do some dribbling and just generally be a pain in the ass. And he's pretty good at that because he's strong and he's got a lot of stamina and he's pretty quick. And occasionally he does good things. And he did lots of those things. And it was wonderful to see, and it warmed the cockles of my heart.
It's worth pointing out his pass to... Well, I guess that's the next game. We're going to talk about that in a second. Sissoko, they seem to be, in wrestling parlance terms, accentuating the positives and hiding the negatives. It's amazing. It took us this long to get here, but here we are.
Is that wrestling parlance, or is that just like...
All right, well, that's something Paul everything. Heyman says so much that I associate it with wrestling. So, let's talk about one last thing. I know we talk about this every week. Is Harry Kane back? It's getting a little tiresome. I think we've thought he's been back for a little bit now, but... Now even the stat nerds are coming along with it. Ted Knutson had a positive tweet and a radar, I believe, about Harry Kane this weekend. Brian, is Harry Kane back for the millionth time? Do you want to have this conversation?
Yeah, sure, why not? I think he's definitely back. I think and I think the point that Ted was making with his radar is that, you know, the shot numbers are back. And I think if I'm remembering the radars correctly, if I'd been professional and prepared for this podcast, I would have had the tweet pulled up so I could be 100% certain. But I think the shot numbers are actually ahead of where they were last year. So, you know, look, Harry Kane has been noticeably in the last few games getting into more attacking positions, has been getting noticeably better shots. I mean, the goal he scored this week was probably his more difficult chance. You know, he had a much easier chance from inside the box, unmarked, that he missed. But, you know, I mean, he's still scoring, he's still getting shots, and that's what we wanted. Like, when Harry Kane was broken, he wasn't shooting. He was shooting three or four times a game. Now he's back to the 6, 7, 8 shots a game kind of territory. That's what we wanted.
It's everything we ever dreamed of. And he just needed 3 months to play through it.
And the rest for the Wayne Rooney testimonial.
Yeah, that's all we needed. All we needed was Wayne Rooney to save our star striker. That's all we ever needed in this world. So, this was not the only important game for Spurs this week. This was the first out of 3 really important matches Spurs have this week. First, it was our game against Chelsea at Wembley. And next up, it was our game at Wembley against Inter Milan. This was a must-win game for Spurs Champions League competition. And we won it 1-0. It was, I don't know, kind of a, what's the best way to put this? Kind of a meh match that felt like the goal was never coming, and then it sure did. It was a really really, really good goal from Christian Eriksen, but the real important thing is that Moussa Sissoko set it up. So naturally, because Moussa Sissoko played such an important part in this game, we're going to go back to the Moussa Sissoko news desk. Rob, what did you think of this performance?
Breaking news, Moussa Sissoko, good.
Thank
not,
you.
Not only did he do the things that he always does that he's good at, but the pass to Dele Alli that led to Alli's neat turn for Eriksen to finish was a good pass into the box after a good run. It was very well played. Moussa Sissoko was fine.
He was fine?
He was fine.
Just fine.
Tottenham were largely fine in this game.
You're going to call our man of the match just fine?
Well, fine by his standards.
Oh, by his...
His lofty standards. He had, as I was saying before we started recording, a few of those peak Moussa Sissoko moments where you're just like, how is this man a professional footballer? But he also did a lot of the things that he's been doing recently, which is why everyone is so excited about him. So, yeah, okay, maybe he like kicked the ball out of bounds with nobody around him trying to dribble a few times, and maybe he passed to nobody. And, you know, maybe he, like, forgot to defend his man a couple of times. Whatever. He had the hockey assist on the only goal of the game.
It was a hell of an assist. It was really very good.
Yeah, he did all the hard work and for once didn't screw it up at the end.
I mean, so, I think that undersells what a good run and pass that was. I mean, it's a really... He did a very nice job of dribbling through Inter's defense and then just like really picked Dele Alli out in a way that, you know, was genuinely impressive. Like Luka Modric could have done that. I would have been like, ooh, that's a nice pass.
Yeah, but it was the run where he, you know, beat 3 defenders.
Well, not just beat, but sort of weaved in and out of them, which I guess is
weaved
sort of
in and out of them, but creating a situation where it was Alli with 1 defender and then Eriksen completely unmarked because he had just taken out everyone on his side of the field.
Now, Rob, is it a coincidence that Spurs' attack sort of picked up when Lamela and Lucas went off for Eriksen and Son?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
I hate to say anything negative about, you know, our liege Eric Lamela, but
it was not Lamela's best game, and I dare say that Tottenham's recent better performances have coincided with a little bit less Lucas.
Well, I still feel like we are trying to, you know, we're trying to play Lucas in a position that doesn't really suit him, and I don't know if this is something where, okay, it's going to suck for now, but it's going to really pay off in, like, you know, a year or something, or if it's just we're, I don't understand why we don't play him as a winger, like...
Yeah, well, the thing is, I don't think it's helping him, but I don't think it's really helping anyone else either.
No, it's just like, he's sort of there, and he's kind of intelligent enough in the box that if the ball falls to him, he's going to put good chances or assists on, but...
Yeah, and it's not really his fault, but, you know, you can't spell desk with an L.
Oh God.
And the thing about desk is that, like, their movements are so coordinated at this point that they just know, they know where to go, yes, and they know what to do. And
that's what it is.
It's a really solid desk.
It's a very solid, reliable desk that you could just count on.
Yeah. So Les Lucas, fresh Sun and Eriksson, and Dele Alli being Dele Alli, and things are looking a lot better.
Well, this is a run of results where it's. I mean, they're looking a lot closer to what we got out of them last year, and it's a lot easier to feel good about this. It doesn't feel like we're stealing points or victories. I mean, we're starting to see a consistency in our performances, which is very heartening, I think.
Well, it's, you know, it's beating a dead horse a little bit, but this is that time of year where all of the, like, Pochettino fitness stuff always seems to lead to an uptick in performance. And, like, they've really had so many injuries. And Ali's back, and Eriksson is back, and Son finally got a rest, and Kane is back, and Vertonghen is coming back. And suddenly it's like, oh, this is actually a really good team. And some of the performances that have been kind of meh, you know, maybe it has something to do with not having our best players or not having them at top level.
So this match is really important. Spurs were in a win-or-go-home situation as far as getting out of our group in the Champions League. Brian, what, going into our final match day against Barcelona, at Barcelona, what needs to happen for Spurs to get out of the group?
I mean, if we win, we're into the knockouts.
There's, like, nothing Inter Milan can do. If we win and Inter wins, it doesn't matter. We're through.
Right. If we win and Inter wins, we're through. So
there's no goal differential there.
Nope. So basically, we right now we have the same goal differential, but one of the tiebreakers is head-to-head, and so we are ahead of Inter on head-to-head because we actually scored an away goal and they did not. So if we finish level with Inter, we're the ones that go through. So basically, all we have to do is match or better whatever Inter do when they play PSV. If PSV beat Inter, then, you know, we're basically fine. We can do anything.
But PSV's, they got nothing to play for.
Correct, yeah. They have 1 point. They cannot even make it into the Europa League at this point.
By that same token, Barcelona is, they could literally kick the ball in their own net for 20 minutes and they would still win the group.
Yeah, they've already won the group. There's literally nothing they can do to lose the group. I don't know. I mean, you know, if they rest a bunch of players, like, it's conceivable that we could win. But I think basically what we're hoping for is draws across the board. Obviously, if Inter win and we do not, we go to the Europa League and they go into the knockouts. So,
well, it's not inconceivable that Barcelona rests a couple guys. I mean, in addition to the fact that this game doesn't matter for them, you know.
I mean, yeah, sure.
They've got a lot of tough games coming up. They're playing an Espanyol side, which is almost a Champions League team this year. I mean, they've got a couple.
It's also the Barcelona derby.
Yeah, it's a derby match. I mean, it's conceivable that we might see a rotated side. Now, whether or not that actually helps us is a whole other question. But, you know, I don't know. Going to the Camp Nou and winning is never easy, but God, if we're ever going to do it, this is the week. I don't really trust PSV to give Inter much of a game. But Inter is Spursier than Spurs, so who the hell knows?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Inter have the advantage of playing at home. So that's another point in their favor. But I don't know. I am less confident of getting an away win in Barcelona than maybe you sounded right there.
I'm just saying, if we're ever going to win away in Barcelona, this is the time.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, why not? But yeah, so regardless, we're going to continue in some European competition. It's possible that it may be the shittier one.
I mean, What do you?
The one that has Arsenal in it.
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, if you had to put money on it right now, you think Spurs are going to be in the knockout stage? I think 548 or 538 has us at 45% to get through, which sounds fair to me.
I mean, you know, look, I like that we have our destiny in our hands to an extent that if we win, we're basically in. But the fact that we have to win at Barcelona is... I would say 45% sounds right. Like, I think it's probably a coin flip, you know, based on all the factors. So I honestly couldn't call it one way or the other. If you're going to make me pick, I will say no, we don't make it to the knockouts.
Rob, I know what you're going to say, but say it anyway.
We're going to win.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
They're not that good. They're good, but they're not that good.
Barcelona.
They're good. They're not that good.
Well, like, they sit messy.
Barcelona, you keep saying it, you're going to continue. They're not that good. Right eventually.
Well, I was right about Chelsea.
Yeah, so see, you know.
So.
Broken clock twice a day. So exactly. You got one more.
There you go. The first game against Barcelona, obviously, kind of got torn to pieces. But at the same time, like, they didn't defend very well either.
I mean, Messi was... I mean, the two differences in that game were Messi and Spurs being Spurs.
Right. But also, like, remember what the lineup was for that game? Like, if we have our good players for that game, I think it's going to be a little different. And they have a couple of injuries, and they're going to be coming off a derby 3 days earlier or whatever. So, yeah, totally. We could totally do it. I mean, I've seen this movie before, but...
Well, you know, I mean, considering where everyone thought we were after we drew to PSV, it's kind of incredible, like you said, Brian, that we have our destiny in our own hands, as tough as it might be. You know, I think we're in much better shape than I think any of us would have thought we'd be in following our match against PSV.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the PSV and Inter results, you know, on the first couple of match days really put us kind of behind the eight ball, and the fact that we, like you said, the fact that we've been able to claw back and get in this position is nice, but gosh, you really would have just liked to not concede those two late goals against Inter, or
you win either of those goals and we're through out of the group stage right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you can't cry over spilt milk, or I guess you can, but there's not a whole lot of point in it. So we will find out in the near future if Spurs will be playing in the Champions League or the Europa League. I got a feeling, I don't know, I like our chances. I like that, you know, we don't have to do some crazy shit to get out of our group. I like that it's just sort of win or, you know, maybe get a draw. But here's hoping.
Win or maybe get a draw, yes. That's
I mean,
a great
that's
model.
Better, like I said, that's way better. I thought we were going to have to, like, Spurs are going to have to win by two, and Inter Milan's going to have to lose by three. I thought it was going to, you know, our best chance was we'd have something weird like that. This is all extremely straightforward, and I am at least grateful for that. So let's go get them. So moving from one team whose fans, the best performance their fans ever saw was Jack Wilshere, to another, we play Arsenal this weekend, the third in a week of big fixtures for Spurs. We're at the Emirates. It is our first derby match against Unai Emery's Arsenal. This is going to be a little different for Spurs. We're not going to have Arsene Wenger's tired old bullshit to rely on. We were talking about this before the podcast. So I think one of the challenges that we're going to have going in this game is, I think when we played Chelsea, for better or for worse, we knew exactly what Sarri was going to throw at us. I think he plays in a very particular style. I don't think he really shifts that around. So I think we could really game plan for that. I'm not so sure that we know exactly what Emery's going to throw at us. Brian, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think, you know, he's done a couple of different things this season in terms of formation. He switched to a three at the back last week. I think maybe kind of in preparation for playing it against Spurs. You know, and he's mixed and matched his midfield combinations, and he's done different things with his attacking band. But I'm going to take the Rob position on Arsenal. And say they're not that good. Like, they are better than, or they are not as good as their table position says they are. You know, they're fifth place right now. A win would bump them up over us. But they're not that good. And I you know, top to bottom, I don't think their squad is as good as ours, whether they're playing three at the back or four. You know, they have good attackers, and they could certainly hit us on the break. I think that's what they'll probably try to do. Sit back, maybe soak up some pressure, and then try to spring Aubameyang over the top. And, you know, certainly if he tries to run that channel between the left back and the center back, he can probably have some joy there because Ben Davis is slow and isn't going to be able to catch up to him. So, you know, there are certainly things to worry about, but, man, Arsenal just aren't good.
Well, we're in this weird situation where, I mean, it kind of reminds me of where Arsenal was when they were still finishing fourth, which is you look at them, you think, how the hell are they getting some of these results? They're going to get exposed sooner or later. But they keep eking out these bullshit results. So you have this sort of double-edged sword. On the one hand, they look like a bunch of frauds, and sooner or later they got to get exposed. On the other hand, they've been getting by on this bullshit for a while now, and if they've gotten by on it this far, who's to say they can't get by another week on it? So I don't know what to count on, the fact that we're good enough to expose them, or the fact that, you know, whatever, like, fucking monkey paw they have in their back pocket is going to keep this voodoo going.
Yeah, I mean, look, I am not particularly confident that they are good enough over the course of the season to beat us. I think, you know, look, the matches at the Emirates, they've been pretty good at home. So, you know, maybe there's a chance for them, but you know, this team just isn't where Unai Emery wants them to be. They're not as tactically sound as they want them to be, as he wants them to be. They're still not that well drilled. They've been getting by on, they have a good attack. At the back, they are shaky at best. You know, their goalkeeping situation is not great, and their defenders are actually bad. You know, their Mustafi makes bad decisions. Socrates is slow. You know, their fullback, other than why do I always forget his name? The right back. Yep. Other than Bellerin, the fullbacks aren't great. You know, so I don't know. I think they're definitely vulnerable. And we can get at them. I think we're going to have to break them down because I do think they're going to make us come on to them.
Rob, looking at this game, how important is it in the scope of both Arsenal and Spurs seasons? Because I think at a cursory glance, this could be a real disaster for Arsenal. Spurs have already started pulling away from them in the last few weeks. I know it's only November. Well, for the next few days, it's November, but it's still 2018. But I don't know, like, if I was an Arsenal fan, I would not feel good about this match if we didn't come out with, if Spurs win, because they're really going to start to pull away, and if Spurs starts to pull away, so is the top four.
And on the one hand, they're only about a third of the way through the season. On the other hand, like you said, you know, beat them at home, putting distance between us and them, and also them in the top four, like, yeah, that could be pretty... It could be pretty devastating for them, but I mean, that's also, like, you know, the North London Derby. So obviously they're going to be real mad if they lose at home to us. But at the same time, like, they're probably, you know, Emery's first season, like, they're going to convince themselves that they're looking at this long term. And, you know, there's still a lot of games to play after this. I think that if we beat them, they should get relegated, but I'm not sure that's how that works this year. You guys are going to have to double check on that one.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
But no, I think you're right in a sense that, like, I don't want to call this like a statement game or whatever, but like, it's not going to look good. And especially like if somehow we dick them the way that we dick Chelsea, like, they're going to be asking a lot of questions. But if it's like one of those, if it's a really tight game and we happen to pull it out, like, they'll be pretty pissed about it. But there's a lot of season left for them.
I mean, do you think Arsenal's I want to phrase this question in the right way. Do you think they're there to be picked off in the way that Chelsea was? Obviously, it's not like they're undefeated in the league like Chelsea was, but, I mean, do you think they're just, I don't know, like, they keep, like, grinding out these bullshit results. It feels like it's been a while since someone really took it to them.
Well, Greg, if you look at the form table.
Yes.
I don't know what a form table is. You know, the lineups are going to be really interesting because they played today in Ukraine with a bunch of kids. So maybe most of their starters will be fresh. We have a couple of interesting questions, like who's going to play in central defense, and, you know, are Eriksen and Son going to come back in and start? Is it going to be the same midfield? Or could we see Danny Rose? Like, there's kind of, Pochettino's going to have to make some interesting decisions about who's going to play twice in 3 days or who's going to play three times in a week, and that could end up making a difference. If it's the lineup that we rolled out against Chelsea and everyone is rested enough, like, yeah, we could put a hurting on them. Or maybe not, but, I mean, judging by the last few games, I think we've really kind of rounding into form, and it's a form that's a lot more impressive than Arsenal has been recently.
So, Brian, here's my final question about this game. Is Emery going to play Ozil, or is he going to try and get him to, like, quit like he's been for the past few weeks?
I think...
Like, I don't even understand what he's doing with Ozil. Like, on the one hand, like, he says these awful things about him when he doesn't start him, but he's not seeming to, like, going the full Mourinho of, like, I want this guy to, like, demand a transfer.
Yeah, I think it's dependent upon how he lines up, because I struggle to find a place for Ozil in, like, a back three system, unless you're going to play him as one of the attacking three in the 3-4-3, and, you know, play him as nominally a winger, but not. But that said, Mkhitaryan played in Kiev, I think, I'm pretty sure. So I think Ozil has to play. I mean, it makes the most sense. I don't think he's a Emery player, as we've seen from some of the comments that he's made. You know, he doesn't do some of the defensive work that Emery wants from his players. He's not maybe as well drilled as Emery would like. But I think in a derby match, I think you'd want a player like Ozil, just because he's so experienced, and, you know, he's been around for these for a while now. So I don't think I can see Emery leaving him out.
Rob, you want to take any shots at Ozil while we're here?
He's pretty good. Yeah. No, I agree with Brian. I think he's going to play.
I mean, I think it's very hard for Arsenal to play a North London derby and just let Ozil sit on the bench if he's healthy.
Right. On the other hand, like, the games where we've really, like, taken it to Arsenal, like, he's been a part of that, where they just get kind of overwhelmed by us physically. I mean, in theory, Emery has got them a little more tactically nuanced. But I think that's part of why he's not playing as much, is because he really doesn't fit into a system that requires players to do actual work. So I have this image in my head of giving up a stupid set piece goal, and obviously Ozil's going to be involved in that. So
it's really funny how I really thought Arsenal pulled ahead of us when they signed Ozil, and now we have, like, at least two midfielders who are demonstrably better than he is.
But, like, their strategy of, like, picking off extra players on really good teams seemed like a pretty good strategy at the time, getting Ozil and Sanchez. And
I mean, it worked for, like, 3 or 4 years there, sort of.
Sort of, yeah. But, yeah, now we have better players, and it's kind of weird.
It's extremely weird. It's extremely weird. Long may it continue. On that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. We all need to return to our respective corners of our apartments to huddle in fear till this North London derby is over. Rob, where can people find you and the Moussa Sissoko News Desk on the internet?
The Moussa Sissoko News Desk can be found at Reno Wallabout on Twitter and at Moussa Sissoko News Desk on LinkedIn and Tumblr.
Good to know. Brian, where can people find you on the internets when you're reading the Moussa Sissoko news desk?
I am on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y. And I'm not going to spell my last name because you don't care. And also, I can be found on LinkedIn at Brett Rainbow.
Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter.com at skipjack0079. And you can find me on Mastodon at Brett Rainbow. So for
will you
Rob,
be tooting there?
Is yeah, that I will be. I will be tooting the hottest Moussa Sissoko news desk links at Brett Rainbow on Mastodon. Is it at on Mastodon? If only we had somebody who actually used Mastodon on the podcast right now. Anyway, for Rob, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Greg. Thank you for putting up with my cold this week. We will hopefully be back to talk to you about a fresh North London Derby victory next week. Come on, you Spurs.